This meeting is now being recorded.
Okay. Well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the new GTLD Subsequent Procedures Subteam Track 3 call on the 13th of December at 20 UTC. As a reminder to all participants, please state your name before speaking for recording purposes and keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking. With this, I will turn the call back over to Karen Day.
Hello, everyone. Good afternoon, good morning, good evening. Thank you for joining us today. As I noted earlier, we are double our attendance, more than from last time, so we're excited about that. Hope we'll get some good work done today. The staff has kindly posted our agenda in the right-hand panel. It was circulated by email earlier. Does anyone have any additions or questions about, concerns about the agenda before we get going? All right, seeing none, we will jump right in. First order of business is our usual reminder to make sure that your statements of interest are up to date and posted. I do note that we have one new member who has not posted his SOI yet, but I do not see him on the call unless by chance he is the number that has no name associated with it. Could whoever is calling in at 847-877-9621 identify yourself, either in the chat or on the phone?
Yes, that's me. I'm signed in as one of the participants, Gigi Levine for NADP.
Okay. Hi, Gigi. Welcome.
Thank you.
Glad to have you with us as a full-fledged member now, not just an observer.
And I thought I had an SOI, but I will double check.
You do. Absolutely, you do. There's a gentleman named David who has joined up, and I was looking to see if that was his number. But we'll contact him offline. Anyway, so thank you for that. Thank you for joining up, and your SOI is posted. Moving on, our first agenda item today, something I called your attention to in the email week before last, and that is a quick chat about our progress and our meeting durations and frequency of meetings, as we obviously have started to slip a little bit behind. We've got a great deal of work ahead of us. I just wanted to take the temperature of the group and see how you're feeling about the current schedule that we're on, which is 1 hour every other week. Then, of course, we have an upcoming holiday break where we won't be having meetings. We'll have another break in March around the ICANN 58 timeline. Do you, as a group, do you want to either extend our meeting times to 90 minutes? Do you want to do more frequent than every other week? Or do you all feel pretty confident that we will get through our agenda if we just keep plugging on at the set 1 hour every other week schedule? I would love to hear some thoughts on that from anyone. Including staff. Jeff, go ahead.
Yeah, I'll kick this off. This is Jeff Newman. I'm not sure if we need an increase in frequency yet of calls, but I do think we need to participate more on the mailing list if we don't want to have calls every week. I think this is important that, you know, we're not getting as much feedback as in other groups on the email. So if phone calls are the only way that people are providing their feedback on the subjects, then I think we will have to go to every week. But I know that there's a lot of overlap in the work tracks. A lot of people I see here are in at least one other, if not multiple other work tracks. So I would say if we can get a commitment, in the new year to really work on the mailing list, then I think We could stay every other week. If not, as we get closer to deadlines, then I think every week. Thanks.
Thank you, Jeff. Cheryl, go ahead.
Thank you. Cheryl Langdon, off the record. I am definitely in the let us continue to plug on and see how we go as we get towards deadlines camp. There is far too much on at the moment with so many other calls. It would be getting less, not more, out of some of us, I think, if we increase the frequency. That doesn't mean that we may not need to increase either duration or frequency as we get towards particular milestones. But I agree with Jeff, if more can happen on the lists and between meetings, that's a good thing. It's a notoriously difficult thing to make happen, however. And so that means as we come up to certain review points and milestones, sure, we might have to do more. But I don't think if we just set out to do more frequent or longer calls that we'll actually get necessarily more work done. I think we'll just get the same pressure regardless. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, Cheryl. Appreciate that. I saw a brief check mark from Alan. Was that in support of Cheryl's statement, or were you wanting to raise your hand there, Alan?
No, I hit the right thing. I was supporting what Cheryl said. More
okay.
Meetings and longer meetings right now might well convince me I don't want to participate in all of these things. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for that. Anyone else? Cheryl, is that a new hand or an old hand?
That's an old hand. I'm sorry.
Okay. That's fine. All right. I know that Gigi says in the chat we might get more mileage out of a 90-minute call than we would out of weekly calls. I tend to agree with that. If we find that we need to add time, that would certainly be my first choice rather than weekly. But hearing no objections, I'm going to assume that by silence, the majority of you are committing to, as Jeff said, be more active in the email. Let's get some conversations going offline that you can respond to in your time when it's convenient for you, but definitely between our two-week calls, let's try and get some more responses going and do some work that way. So for now, we will, for staff's benefit, we will continue on with the schedule set forth 1 hour every other week as calendared. Okay, then. Tick off number three and move into item number four. A recap and reminders of regard to the discussions that took place in Hyderabad. The first is with regard to a document that was published while Hyderabad was going on that is going to come into play in our work later on that I just want to remind everyone to please do pull up, download, print, take a read through when you can because it's a rather sizable document. It is the Council of Europe report on applications to ICANN for community-based new generic top-level domains, opportunities and challenges from a human rights perspective. And within that document, they do address community-based objections, which we will be coming up upon shortly. So if you do not have a link to that document, let us know. We will recirculate it on the list. But I would encourage you all to take a read through that and be prepared to talk about it in the future. The second highlight from Hyderabad that I wanted to, again, just put back in the front of your mind is the discussions with regard to the role of the independent objector. I'll let Robin, since she was actually moderating the session, speak to that specifically. But from my perspective as a listener, it seemed pretty clear in not only our session but some other sessions that there's, if not doing away with the independent objector, a major overhaul of that role that's being called for by the community. But again, if you haven't had a chance, if you weren't in Hyderabad, do listen to the session that Robin moderated there. There was some good feedback there. Robin, do you have anything you'd like to add about that, or Jeff, as you were there? Anybody else that was there want to speak to that point before we move on? Okay. I do note in the comments that Jeff has said that that the Council of Europe report was brought up again recently at the IGF, and that the GAC is discussing this report and may likely base some advice on that report in the future. So again, this is be a key document for us to be familiar with. Was that someone trying to speak? Kurt has asked for a link. Steve, do you have that? Emily, do you have that available? You can put that in the chat. It's on our wiki, I believe. Let me. We'll look it up and get it in the chat for you there, Kurt. Just a second. Moving on, the update from the status of the full working group on activities and the full working group or in other work tracks since Hyderabad. Jeff, could you update us on that?
Yes, sorry. It takes me a second to get off mute. This is Jeff Newman. So this has been a busy week for the PDP. Last week, I think, or last couple of weeks were a little bit slow given the ICANN meeting. There was a meeting from a couple of the work tracks, but a couple of them, like this one, had to be postponed because of lack of attendance. It seems like after ICANN meetings, we consistently have that problem. But ultimately, and I just see Emily posted a link to the Council of Europe paper, ultimately, our goal for the full work team is for the full working group is to finalize the response to community comment one, and then for each of the work tracks, in addition to working on each of these individual areas, it's going to be in the first quarter to try to come up with community comment two, which are more specific questions in each of the work track areas. So that's going to be a focus of the group. And really a focus starting early next year of hitting the milestones and coming up with deliverables. And so you're going to see a lot of work come out from the leadership team on different types of we're trying to standardize certain outputs. So stay tuned for more of that. And the rest of this week we have we do have a work track four call tomorrow. In 24 hours, and then in 48 hours, we have a work track two call. And then those are the last work track calls before the break. But we do have a full working group call on this coming Monday, which has been rescheduled from this past Monday. So please look out for that and make sure you have that on your schedule. Thanks.
This is Karen, and actually I believe we and Work Track 4 are also scheduled for the following week. I think we're on for the 20th. If staff can confirm that for us, I do believe that we have calls next week as well.
Oh, okay, great. Sorry, I may have spoken too soon.
Not letting you off that quickly, Jeff.
All right, thanks. All right, That's great. That's good. Thank you.
We're on for the 20th at same time, this same time slot on the 20th. Okay, let's move into item number 6 on our agenda, where I am hoping that we are going to wrap up our look at limited public interest objections. Some time ago, before Hyderabad, I sent out to the list an observation based on progress thus far that it seemed the general consensus, the general temperature of the working group was that as far as this one specific narrow limited public interest objection, that the AGB language seems to be in good order. It seemed to have functioned within the scope and would still be viable for subsequent procedures. We got no indication from anyone in email or on the list that they thought that was off base. The one person who commented thought he was commenting on legal rights objections, and when it was pointed out that we were talking about limited public interest objections, he withdrew his comment on that issue. So we have some implementation suggestions that have been made as we've been talking, and we will be noting those and have noted those to bring up at the time, at the sort of back end of the process when we start specifically dealing with implementation issues. But for right now, are we in agreement that as to that one narrow limited public interest objection, we are in good shape with the existing language? Yay or nay? Silence will be assumed to be agreement. Jeff, please go ahead. Then Alan.
Yeah, I don't. Sure. Thanks. This is Jeff Newman. I want to. I think we should keep it out the list for some additional comments. I think there were some. Some of the text was fine in the guidebook. I just think that we should just do another review of the decisions because I think they clarified some of it. There were a number of people that filed public interest objections based on other matters that they tried to squeeze in that definition. So maybe just some clarifications might help.
Okay, certainly we will can send that back out the list. That is one thing that we had requested several meetings ago. We had talked about the potential for tightening up perhaps the quick look mechanism. We had talked about perhaps some language to require the recitation of what the basis of the objection was, and had asked for thoughts and feedback about doing so on the list and got none, but we'll certainly put that call out again. Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, I really don't even know if this was ever put on the original list of problems, so it may have dropped between the cracks. At large, and the ALAC were funded by ICANN to submit public interest objections, and we did, in fact, submit a couple, and they ended up being rejected because we didn't have standing. So this was sort of a catch-22 that we were empowered to make public interest objections, essentially equivalent to the independent advisor, but from at large, independent objector, but then deemed that we didn't have standing because, in fact, you know, we didn't have particular personal involvement with the TLDs that were mentioned. So going forward, if we're going to maintain that kind of objection, we're going to have to put clarification rules in to make sure that there's not a catch-22, that you're funded to use it, but you can't actually make one. So I'm not quite sure where to capture it, and I don't really remember if indeed as I said, if indeed this was listed as one of the problems when we did the initial triage of issues. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. That specific issue has not been brought up within this group to begin with, and certainly that would be something to consider when looking at the language with regard to standing.
Yeah, thank you.
Paul?
Thanks, Paul McGrady here. And since we're going to take at least another week to go through this as we look at Alan's issue, I would like for us to focus a little bit on the word generally. We have generally accepted legal norms of morality and public order. And I'm wondering if there is a different word that resides somewhere between generally and universally. There are some things I can just see a frustrated group who may live in a region where something is generally accepted, but they may encounter resistance to their objection based upon that. And so I think that we need to find a word that's stronger than generally, but less than universally, because, you know, the world's full of all kinds of folks. And so I don't know of any – well, I know of very few principles that are accepted universally. So can we put that out to list, too, whether or not the word generally serves the purpose we're hoping for? Thanks.
Yes, thank you, Paul. Certainly. All right, Jeff, is this Newhand?
Yep, this is, yes. It's on the ALAC. I do think we should put it as a item that we put on the list to discuss. I think completely taking off my chair hat and going as when I was at a former employer, the only ALAC objection was the dot help. And frankly, what I saw in the ALAC process was enough to discourage any future application of the ALAC having the right to do some sort of objection base that does not have standing. I think there was a lot of manipulation of the ALAC process. Again, this is all personal commentary, please. So I had been given access to or had seen some of the public ALAC lists, not been given access. And there was some lobbying done by groups that did not want to file their own objection that used the ALAC in order to, as their avenue to file their objection. I would be happy to be much more specific when the time comes to review that. Thanks.
Every time I try to.
Okay. Thank you, Jeff. Alan?
Yeah, thank you. I would, I guess, disagree about the manipulation, although, yes, there was certainly attempts to convince us of something. But just for the record, I wasn't advocating that we even be given the right in the next round, just that the ability to file a public interest objection and be funded for it, but then having to prove independent standing just doesn't make sense. So you've either got to fix it in one way or fix it in the other. I wasn't arguing for the objection, just that what was there essentially was a catch-22 that didn't make any sense.
All right. Thank you, Alan. Anyone else? Any more feedback on this process? Do we feel like we need to, at this point, go and seek out those involved in these types of objections and request specific feedback from them? Do we want to tackle that on a per-objection basis? Do we want to look at seeking feedback on all the objections directly? At some point in the near future. What do people think about that? Okay, well, if no one thinks we need any additional feedback from the applicants themselves, other than what's been provided on the calls, that certainly will make it quicker. The other thing that we need to decide on order or that we're going to deal with it. Oh, Jeff, sorry, just see your hand now. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think the feedback we can get or should get is I think we should tailor some community comment to, or whatever we call CC2. We should tailor a couple questions towards those that did face objections. So,
okay.
But right. I think we've been trying too hard to get comments on this calls and no one's speaking up. So we got to rely on community feedback at this point.
Okay. All right. Will do. The other thing that I had on my list that we need to determine if we want to address on a objection by objection basis as we deal with these individual types of objections, or if we want to hold it more until we're dealing with implementation, is the fees section for the objections. The actual cost, what's refundable, what's or not, whether or not we're going to go to a loser's pay model. What do we feel like is the best way to approach that? To me, personally, it would make sense to do it all at one time. I think it could probably be simplified that way, but that's just my personal perspective. Would welcome to hear from others. Jeff, are you asking me to repeat the point? I was talking about whether or not we should deal with the costs associated with filing the objections as we deal with each type of objection, or should we deal with cost for filing objections as a whole after we have done a walkthrough of each of the types of objections. My personal opinion is that it could be better dealt with at the end. We could perhaps simplify rather than if we deal with each objections cost in a silo. So I was looking for feedback on that. Okay, so far we seem everyone has agreement on that. So we will do that towards the end. All right, Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to point out that Kurt made an interesting comment in the chat about halfway up the window right now, which I think merits inclusion somewhere.
Okay, thank you. Let's see, Kurt, not sure how to introduce this. It was clear to me that the objection process was used, gamed by some applicants to delay other applications. It was thought that the loser pays mechanism would prevent much of this gaming, but it turned out not to be so. All right, Alan, did you want to comment on that?
No, sorry, I just wanted to make sure we didn't lose it in the chat.
Yes. Does anyone have any thoughts around that? Do we have evidence of that? Jeff, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Jeff Newman. I'm not sure we have direct evidence of that. I think that for the most part, people who file objections actually believe that they have the right to file the objection and that they would win the objection. There may be some outliers, but I do believe that most of them, for whatever reason, thought that they could interpret, either hire creative legal counsel or interpreted provisions very creatively. But I'm not sure if we're going to have direct evidence of people that game the system deliberately to just for the purpose of delaying someone else.
Okay. Ruben says, I believe that it was a mixture of doing by purpose and doing by not caring whether someone will be impacted, just for the small chance of prevailing, to which John agrees. Kurt follows that up with, if we agree that there was gaming and that there was harm from the game from it, and I'm not sure that this is true, then we should try to address the gaming, but not just by pricing, by other means. Hello to someone's puppy dog. Does anyone have anything to add around this concept of was there gaming, and are there ways that we should be dealing with prevention of that? All right, then. If not, we will. The dog agrees that we had gaming. Yes, Rubens, I think he does. We will make note of this. And, oh, Jeff, go ahead.
Yeah, sorry. I got dropped from the Adobe room for a sec. I think that we talked about a couple ways, like a quick look mechanism. And I think another way could be some, I mean, if we do believe that it's going on, that some penalty. Impose some penalty on someone that's kind of like a thinking in the legal world of a Rule 11 kind of sanction for a party that's found to have filed something frivolously or in this respect gaming. I think, again, I'm not a believer that there were so many of those filed. I actually do believe that they had a right. They think they had a right to do it. It's for us, I think, to clarify if we think that there was something in there that we want to make something perfectly clear so people don't file those types of objections. We can try to do that if we see evidence of it. But, yeah, I mean, maybe it kind of like a reverse domain name hijacking in the UDRP, but with teeth, like in the URS, where you say, okay, if we find that you've filed one of these, then we won't accept objections if you have any other objections or some kind of penalty like that.
Yeah, that's certainly a possibility. Does anyone have any thoughts around that, introducing sort of a sanctioning concept, whereas if you fail the quick look, then there's some penalty for wasting everyone's time?
Well, just to clarify, it's more than just.
Yeah.
Sorry, can I just clarify that? It's more
sure.
than just. It's more than just failing a quick look. I think you have to find that there was like some intentional kind of. Because I mean, a quick look should shorten the time period to throw out, you know, ones that don't have any merit. But if we find that people are trying to game the system in some sort of intentional malicious way, that's where the penalty would come in. Thanks.
Got it. Right. Sorry for misspeaking there. Paul, go ahead.
Paul McGrady. So I'd like to invoke the Newman rule here and say that before we race off to fix it, I'd like to more fully understand whether or not it's broken. I know we have some opinions that it's broken, but I've yet to hear of a concrete example of it being broken. It doesn't mean that it's not broken. I just think that we're in the realm of opinion now and not in the realm of fact. So I don't know how we gather that fact so that we can get comfortable that it's broken so that we can do what Jeff is suggesting. But I think we've jumped ahead a couple of steps. Thanks.
I would suggest that we would target that as a question for CC2 and ask people to come forward with any evidence that we may have. And absent anybody responding with evidence, then we don't have any. Jeff, would you think that's appropriate?
Yes. Sorry. It takes me a second. This is Jeff. I agree that we should put that out, and I agree with Paul that we should find some factual basis for that gaming. So thank you.
Okay. We will then add that into the queue for our CC2 questions. All right. I'm going to move back over to the agenda and let's see where we are. Oops. All right, so to wrap up on the limited public interest objections, unless anyone has anything else they want to raise, we will circulate out to the list the questions that we've been over today. We will ask for specific suggestions as far as language tweaks. If any of those of you who have commented on this, Paul, you come to mind on the generally versus universal, if there is a way that you would like that question presented to the group, feel free to email me with, you know, how you'd like it presented or what you'd like asked, and so we can be sure and capture that if it's different from what's in the notes and the action items from our list, and we will get that done, try to get that done tomorrow. And plenty of time to have some discussion prior to our call on the 20th. Anyone else before we move on? All right. Well, then next up for us to look at is our legal rights objections. And legal rights objections are found in Applicant Guidebook Section 3.2.2, and then subsequently in 3.5.2, and they are a part of Principle G Recommendation 3. If we look at what the applicant guidebook says now, it is, rights holder has standing to file a legal rights objection. The source and documentation of the existing rights of the objector is claiming, which may include either registered or unregistered trademarks, are infringed or applied by the applied for GTLD, must be included in the filing. An intergovernmental organization is eligible to file legal rights objections if it meets the criteria for registration of a .int domain name. An international treaty between or amongst governments must have established the organization, and the organization that is established must be widely considered to have independent international legal personality and must be subject of and governed by international law. The specialized agencies of the UN or an organization and the organizations having observer status at the UN General Assembly are also recognized as meeting this criteria. Then with regard to that's the basis for standing. So then if we move into 3.5.2, we get into the more specifics of the actual objection process. But let's take a quick talk at first about standing. Do we feel that what is before us and what was used in the past is still relevant for future rounds, future procedures, sorry, using the round word, or do we feel like there needs to be some looking at that language? Anyone? See, Rubens is typing. Rubin's comments, the legal rights objection standing for IGOs and INGOs is something peculiar. But removing it might cause issues with the GAC of where they would go. Does anyone else want to comment on this ability of IGOs and INGOs to file legal rights objections? Did that come into play last time? Do we think that it was used appropriately or not? See, Rubens is still typing. ECS. Just to confirm, this is a hot topic right now in GNSO land. Paul, would you like to comment on that? And I also see Mike Rodenbaugh has his hand up. Mike, go ahead. Mike, are you there? Uh-oh, no audio for Mike. Paul, can you share with us a little more what while Mike's trying to dial back in, what you mean by the hot topic in GNSO with regard to Ruben's comment?
Sure. So, Paul McGrady for the record. Right now, there's quite a bit of work back and forth about how sort of non-standard, really non-commercial entities like NGOs, IGOs, others, enforce their rights against second-level domain registrations, and specifically whether or not different policies are required for them other than the UDRP, and specifically in relationship to a right of a second-level registrant to appeal if they lose. And so just I guess there's not much to do here other than realize that if we talk about changing this language, we will be wading into a bit of a minefield, which is, fine, but there is quite a bit of background going on. If we really want to take a look at changing the standing to bring in in some way modify the non-standard trademark holder as right to standing. We may want to bring in some folks from the GNSO who are knee-deep in this. Phil Corwin comes immediately to mind, who may be able to come and give us essentially the lay of the land as it is now as it applies to second level, so that at least we are sensitive to the issues so that we don't essentially bake something new that, gets us bogged down for a couple years while we sorted out with the GAC and others. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Mike. Excuse me, Paul. Mike, is your audio back on yet? I'm not hearing. If you'd like to type your comment into the chat, I'll be glad to read it out to the group. Sorry about that, Mike. If you do you need a call out, we've got about 10 minutes left, or you can just type that in. Does anyone else have any thoughts around standing and the way it is currently defined in the applicant guidebook? Would you like further exploration, perhaps if we invite Phil Corwin or someone in to know more about this issue before we decide to raise it or not? Or are we – okay, go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, thanks. My view on this one is kind of like I guess it's the so-called Newman rule. I don't think we had an issue with standing. I'm not aware of anyone that made a complaint that the standing rules were a problem. I think the IGO, INGOs, I think the fear was that they didn't have a trademark registration necessarily, so that they couldn't enforce the type of legal rights objection that a trademark owner could by virtue of, not having a trademark to rely upon. I know this is, like Paul said, it's something that the GNSO is looking into in terms of a couple different areas. One is adding it as like a cause of action to like a UDRP, and another area in terms of whether they should have first right at their at strings that match their names and or acronyms. I don't think giving someone the right to file an objection is as strong as what the IGOs are asking for at this point. So I think my preference would be to keep the language as is and then put it out for comment, or keep the standing language as is and put it out for comment to see if anyone finds an issue. Because this doesn't give them the right to win an action. It just gives them the right to file the cause of action. So thanks.
Sorry, I had to come off mute myself. Thank you, Jeff. I note that Kurt says in the comments the legal rights objection was lightly, if at all, used. It is cheap insurance for the GTLD program. I think we should leave it as is. Paul McGrady says, plus one, Kurt, I see no reason to wade into this mess if we don't have to. More comments along that lines. If it's not broke, don't fix it. However, Mike has commented that it was used in several instances which bear reviewing and considering whether changes are appropriate, specifically .merck, Del Monte, .gcc. I would propose then that, Mike, if you could point out, use the list, since I seem to be not having your audio, if you could point out to us what your concerns are with those three, then we could get a conversation going on the list about those three. And again, if you will recall, if you go back to our wiki page, there is posted there in our resource materials is a spreadsheet with all of the objections by type. It would do us well to refresh ourselves on what was filed in this category for those of us that weren't directly involved in any of them. But again, we'll heavily rely on those who were involved to step forward and let us know the issues that you had. Obviously, if we weren't involved, we can't just surmise what the issues were. So with that, I would implore you to do that before the next our next meeting, and we'll look to dive more deeply into this. With regard to our last 8 minutes, seven, 8 minutes by my clock, is there anyone that has anything else that they want to bring up today? Is there anything that you as group members would like us as leadership to be sure that we get on the table for a future meeting as we're looking to develop our agendas and our work? Now would be a good time to let us know so we can be sure and get it covered. Paul, go ahead.
Thanks, Paul McGrady. So I know we don't have time to do this in this call, but I wanted to make sure that by talking about the standing on the legal rights objection, we don't inadvertently forget to talk about the elements. I think that this the legal rights objection process is fundamentally flawed because it is based on a blend of infringement theory, which, of course, applications aren't uses in commerce. They're just applications. So infringement anchoring the entire process is a strange word that is out of place, as well as quite a bit of text that is borrowed from the UDRP complaint or the UDRP policy, which applies pretty well in a second-level situation because second-level GTLDs are registered instantaneously, whereas new GTLD applications can take months or years to get from the day you file it until the day that you put it into the root. And so I think that the legal rights objection needs a significant overhaul to deal with the practical realities of the kind of thing we're actually doing. I wish this had gotten more attention in round one. I'm sure we were all very busy and just didn't pay it a lot of attention. But for this next round, I would really like for us to take this apart element by element and make sure that it makes sense. Thanks.
Thank you, Paul. And I, based on that comment, then I'm going to go back to Kurt and ask Kurt if you can comment. When you made the statement, which Paul agreed with, that the legal rights objection was likely, if used at all, we should leave it as is. And then Paul says, I see no reason to wade into the mess if we don't have to. Were you speaking then only to the standing was fine and should leave it as is, Kurt? Or were you speaking to the whole process? Because obviously Paul thinks that the whole process isn't fine. So I'm just trying to clarify, Kurt, what your statement was to which other people were agreeing.
So I think, well, so I agree with, so Paul, I don't agree. So Paul, I agree with, yeah, this is Kurt, thanks. So
okay.
This is Kurt Prince. So Paul, I agree with the substance of what you're saying. And when the objection was crafted, those very same issues were identified, and the people that were talking about how to craft this looked at each other and said, it seems like we're crafting something that can't really be used because the TLD application is just an application, and you know, this sort of objection would be most valuable once there's some actual use or some substance. Nonetheless, it was left the way it was because on the, you know, outside chance that, you know, somebody applied for .Microsoft and clearly wasn't Microsoft and just by the use of a fanciful name was obviously going to use it for some bad purpose. We knew that the guidebook or the evaluation process needed some tool in case that happened. And in fact, it did kind of happen with Merck versus Merck and gave them a tool to, kind of go at each other. So it was recognized early on that the objection possessed those intrinsic problems that you identified, but that it, like I said, it was just cheap insurance that we have the process in case, there was some obviously infringing application, so obvious that just the application itself, was clear in its infringement, that some tool existed to use to beat those guys over the head. So it's not very useful, but I think it's, you know, like I said, cheap and necessary insurance. And how, you know, how we might tweak it is up to our discussion.
Sorry, guys. I'm sitting here talking to myself on mute. Apologies. Paul, if you would, it would be much appreciated if you could lead us off on this discussion on the list. I know you have put a lot of thought into this, and that might be a good jumping off place for us. If you would lay out for us what your vision of what we should aim for would be, and then we can just have at it from there. So with that said, we've got about a minute left. Again, our next call is scheduled for next Tuesday at this same hour. I hope to have some good discussions with you on the email between now and then. Robin will be leading the call next week. And thank you for your time today.
I appreciate it.
Anyone else?
Thank you.
Have anything before we go? And we'll stop the recording.
Thank you. Bye.